Hello, Legions of the Unspoken. Welcome back to another one of those great podcasts that we're always bringing you over here at the Unspoken Decade. I'm Dean Compton, got Emily Scott here, and we are venturing back to 1993. I'm talking Ultraverse, I'm talking Malibu Comics, and in particular, I'm talking Sludge. Emily, it's great to be here, and what a great offbeat comic to be talking about here tonight. We get lots of little Ultraverse Easter eggs. We get Ultraverse appearances from the big gun himself, Prime. But this is decidedly something a little off the beaten path that, you know, you might not necessarily expect on the ground level of a startup superhero universe.
There are a lot of comics that you have had me read for the Unspoken Decade that I can honestly say I've never read anything like that about, and you can add this one to the list. I've never read anything quite like this before. In particular, I've never read anything that I've had such a visceral reaction to. Every issue, there was something in it that made me feel something like the physical and emotional response to it.
Yeah, and This comes out of the mind of, you know, Steve Gerber, the guy who created Howard the Duck, one of comic book's quirkiest and most eccentric writers. And he does a lot of eccentric and quirky stuff here. But you got to give a lot of props to Aaron Lopresti, the penciler, and Gary Martin, the inker. I think Ken Phipps did some inking later on. But those two are the primary guys. And Aaron Lopresti also wrote a couple stories, which are really good, which we'll certainly talk about. But the vibe and the ambiance and the atmosphere created by the art, it really does come across as revolting in a good way.
There's an
revolting. Not normally the most positive of gerunds.
There's an element of realistic, like it looks photorealistic, but a lot of things are drawn in a sort of very realistic way. Like people are sort of just drawn how regular people look. But then the contrast with that is this very grotesque art in such a way that it almost feels like a horror comic, even though I don't think it necessarily would fall neatly into that genre.
Well, comic books have a long history with the swamp creature, the gross creature. It goes back to The Heap way back in the day, in the Golden Age, which was then, you know, brought back by Skywald Comics in the early 70s. Obviously Swamp Thing, obviously Man Thing, and a few other guys. I'm sure I'm missing somebody. Hey, man, there's a comments box you can type. So, you know, tell me who I missed, who else I'm thinking of. I know there are a couple more. But you are right. You are right in that these aren't necessarily superheroes, but they do reside within superhero universes, and they kind of take on the darker elements of what would happen within the confines of a superpowered universe. There are superpowers that emanate from all different origins, and that's one of the things I love about the DC Marvel universes, and of course the Ultraverse, which we're talking about today, is that there are a myriad ways for people to get power. Super science, super sorcery exist side by side, so there's certainly room for a muck monster or two within a world where you have guys like Hardcase and the Strangers and Prime and Warstrike.
Who is Warstrike?
Warstrike's this like hired assassin guy who's like a superhero. He's one of Mantra's supporting characters. Like, I think you remember Mantra, the age-old warrior man, is now put in a lady's body. We talked to Roland Mann about it. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the guy who killed her last incarnation when she was still a he, but Warstrike's on the wrong side and didn't realize it, so now they like work together.
Oh, okay, right.
So there's more to Warstrike than that, I'm sure. I haven't read a ton about it. Again, you want to fill in the blanks when it comes to Warstrike in the Ultraverse. Comments box, baby! Participate! Or you can even do it on Twitter, at Unspoken Decade. So anyhow, within the confines of these universes, there's just lots of room for a muck monster. People who, you know, would occupy the darker elements of that, because if somebody's bright and shiny, like let's say the Fantastic Four are shiny, there's also going to be darker superpowers, just like there's going to be, you know, going to be a Morbius in that world. Even in our real world, there are, you know, in the same newspaper, you'll read something where it's like, hero cop saves 43 children and 8 kittens from mutant serial killer or whatever. Probably not mutant, but serial killer or whatever. In the same one, it'll be like, police brutality awful. So, you know, I mean, I just think that within the superhero universe, you'd kind of see, you'd see that as well. And guys like Sludge fill in that blank very nicely.
But even with, you know, when you think about a character like Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I like to.
You do indeed like to think about Swamp Thing a lot.
Who doesn't?
Even though he could potentially be sort of like a sludgy creature or just like a mucky creature, I also think of him as sort of like, you know, like mossy and like soft and sort of like, you know, like you might like, you know, have a nice, you know, lie down on a nice mossy hill.
You know what?
And like,
I'm going to have to get you Moss Man. Moss Man's like this He-Man toy that came with like real moss almost on him. It's not real moss, obviously, but it felt like it's like the grossest, nastiest thing ever. And like when I think of Swamp Thing, that's who I think of. I like think of feeling this crap that would pick up like every bit of lint and, you know, 4-day-old crunch berry or whatever it came across in the carpet. Probably ticks. So I don't think of Swamp Thing is as nice as you do. You're like, I'll just go have a lay down. I'm like, ah, he probably smells like crap. You get within, you know, like, I don't know, 47 miles of a swamp and it smells awful. But, you know, this is not a Swamp Thing podcast, I promise.
No, but he's a...
I promise you.
But I think of him as, like, sort of natural and, like, of the earth and, like, earthy.
Yeah.
In that way. Whereas
I get what you're saying.
Sludge is literally, like, sewage.
Right.
There are times when, like, he's just sitting around and there's just stuff stuck to him. And I actually wrote the note to myself while reading it. Ew, there's just stuff stuck
to him. There's just stuff stuck to him.
And the entire time I was reading this, and I said, you know, at the beginning, I had a very visceral reaction to reading this. Like, there were so many times I was
like chicken bones.
Sick to my stomach reading this. And I could not get the smell out of my nostrils of, like, water after, or, like, beer after you put cigarette butts out and it sat around for, like, 3 days and you go to throw it away and, like, some spills out and it's just an assault on your nose. Like, that's the smell, like, that burning, awful smell the entire
bachelor
time.
Bed.
So, and it's, you know, kudos, and once again, just kudos to the artists for never letting you forget that this is a gross. And I kept saying the word gross. I would just read it and go gross to myself. And then somewhere around, I think it's issue 3, where I was like, I keep just saying this is gross. There is a character who comes across a bit of sludge and just literally says, like I had been saying, gross.
Yes, certainly, you know, putrid would probably also be an adjective that you might utilize in this situation. And Lopresti, you know, like I said, does a fantastic job conveying the just how grotesque this monster is. And before we go any further, for like the three people who are listening, because they probably love us, they're like, oh my God, those crazy guys, crazy lady, doing another podcast about some guy I never heard of. Okay, I'll listen. Sludge is Frank, I guess, Hoag? I guess that's how you pronounce his name?
I guess.
Wog?
I was just saying Hoag.
Hoag? Anyhow, H-O-A-G, folks. H-O-A-G is how you spell his last name. And he's a cop who's on the take into the Marcello mob. And he refuses to rub out another cop who's on the take, Quinn, who is also playing both ends against the middle, working for another, for an Asian crime cartel, the Wongs, and he refuses to rub that guy out. Then he also refuses to stay quiet about it. So after the meeting, they try and kill him. As he's trying to get away, he crawls into the sewers as, you know, where they're trying to kill him, I guess it's a lab, and he winds up with this bio-restorative formula, which I know is what Swamp Thing was doing, but it's a very similar thing going on here, right? I mean, and then he winds up crawling into the sewer, and apparently the formula works with the sewage and his body, and basically reconstructs him into a muck monster who has a great deal of difficulty remembering things, you know, such as words or how time is passing. You know, a great... I won't say a great lack of cognitive ability, but an interesting dulling of them to where it's not like, you know, Man-Thing doesn't talk, and it can be very difficult sometimes to convey what Man-Thing's thinking and certain other monstrosities within, you know, various comic books and genre fiction. If they, you know, this kind of character, sometimes it can be difficult to get across who they are, what's going on. This is where, this is, I think, Steve Gerber, who I assume came up with the speech pattern, came up with a great way to get over that he was, what he was thinking and what he was feeling, but also get over that this guy was no longer really a person, and that his, like I said, his cognitive abilities had been dulled, but not completely stricken.
Well, it comes and goes.
Yeah. It's the work.
Which seems to be different from some of these other characters who are like, you know, maybe, you know, crossing that line between, you know, still a man or not a man or whatever their cognitive abilities are. It comes and goes. And he says words wrong. His brain will supply him with the wrong word. There's a name for this condition in real life. I can't remember what it is, oddly enough, or ironically.
It's foot disease.
You mentioned to me, as I was reading it, that some people were not a fan of this particular aspect of the character.
I have seen that on message boards.
Which I was not necessarily on board at first, because to me it can't be random. And at first it seemed as though a lot of the words that were, you know, he was coming up with instead of the right words were just random words. And I think after a while they have to become meaningful. And I think eventually, I think for me it was around issue 4 or 5, it really hit a stride where the word that he would come up with instead of the right word had some greater significance, and it all of a sudden had a much more emotional impact than just seeming like, you know, a character tick or some sort of, you know, just personality trait.
Well, I mean, he was always, I thought, and this is the way I remember it, I could be wrong. It was always like if he was trying to say stop, he might say, you know, stripe. It would be something that was kind of similar, and he's having trouble getting it together, which I think is a personality trait in and of itself. And that, you know, this guy is, slight pun intended, sludging through this, trying to get the correct answer. Slight pun intended.
Sure, sludge absolutely. Pun. And it makes sense, but I think when it really becomes not necessarily justified, but when it becomes just really meaningful to me and actually has an emotional impact on me is, you know, later. I think, like I said, I think he just hits a stride with it, or whoever is writing it.
Right.
I think a couple different people might have written
it. It's mostly Steve Gerber and Aaron Lopresti did a couple issues. And also, our good friend Paul O'Connor over at Longbox Graveyard apparently worked on some sludge that wasn't ever published, I believe. I'm gonna hunt down his article that he wrote over at Longbox Graveyard and link to it here. And if you don't click that link, you should go to longboxgraveyard.com because it's lots of fun. It's great, you know, he's a great guy and he does great work. And I've done a little work over there, probably gonna do a little soon, a little more soon. But let's talk a little bit about Sludge. Let's talk about what he does, because I mean, this is, even though it's not a superhero comic, it is a superpowered suspense comic, or a superpowered, you know, horror comic, superpowered mystery comic, however you want to put it, whatever one of those words, those are words that would be utilized for the titles like, you know, House of Mystery or Weird War Tales from the 70s and Swamp Thing. And I feel like this would fit right alongside them, you know, and those, and certainly those guys existed in the same world as Batman and Superman, etc. So, Sludge, you know, like most heap-type creatures, has amazing restorative powers. You shoot him, you cut him, you drop an anvil on his head like you're Wile E. Coyote or something. It's not gonna work. He just gets better. But and of course he's super strong, and he seems to be, you know, fairly able to, like, absorb stuff around him if he gets, you know, in that sewer, he's absorbing
it. Right, it just sticks to him.
Just sticks to him. There you go. Because it's gross, right? But I think in all honesty, the grossest thing that he does is his ability to grow other people's cells. And in the first issue, we see him, like, grow people's skin, a gangbanger skin around his mouth, so that then he suffocates. And later on, when he saves a lady from drowning, where he grabs her, her arm, like, you know, grows a whole lot. It's basically, he gives people cancer. That's his power. He gives people instant cancer.
Yeah, anytime somebody was, you know, was wishing hate on somebody and like, oh, I hope they get, you know, eye cancer and die or whatever. Like, he can just do that. He can
just has to touch them.
Just touch them and do that. Which is just, there's something so unsettling about that to me. I feel like this is going to stick with me long after I forget, like, the specific details of, you know, the different plots and crime wars and all the other different things going on in this comic. Some of the images of him melting people's faces or, you know, ballooning them up into these grotesque math are never going to leave me. But what's even more disturbing about it is, unlike a lot of other superpowered creatures, either villain or hero, it's not even so much that he has a moral ambiguity, it just seems like he has a moral indifference.
Yeah, there's definitely a moral indifference to him.
He certainly seems to seek out criminals, and we do see him assisting people in need, and there does seem to be some vestige of morality there, but he also kills people very casually. It's not even like, say, the Punisher, where he's certainly, like, willing and able to kill people if it suits his needs. He just doesn't, he does it like it doesn't make one difference to him one way or the other.
It's true.
Even, when he goes to confront some of the guys who threw him in the sewer to begin with, and he kills one of them, and he says, "Revenge is mine, big damn deal." And just doesn't really seem to care less and just kind of walks away.
Well, I think that's more not that he's cold or anything, but it's just that at this point, due to being trapped as a sludge creature, just doesn't really seem to be satisfying whatsoever. He has bigger issues, which is, you know, that this is a miserable existence. He can't touch anything. He can't think straight. He can't figure out when time is passing. And so he wants to die, that's what I was going to get into next. So I think that ties into that attitude. It's like, big damn deal. Who cares? I'd rather be dead.
And that's something, you know, in one moment of clarity, or as close to clarity as he gets, he's thinking about how, he probably deserved to die, but he did not deserve this. That what? No one really deserves this, and he's, you know, there's a pattern of him sort of thinking of death almost as a gift. And we see him give it to people on more than one occasion.
It's true. It's true. He does seem to think that, like, I did you a favor anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and I completely understand that, but I don't think his indifference is necessarily a character flaw so much as it's a natural progression of the character to where he's at, because he certainly finds things to care about along the way, including Shelley Rogers, who is a reporter who's, you know, just all over the scoops. She's getting the scoops. All over it. Ear to the ground. Eyes to the sky.
And everyone seems to dislike her intensely for
yes,
it.
Yes, nobody likes her.
Her editor, the cops.
The camera guy.
The giant lizard creature who lives in the sewer.
Yeah, the Egyptian god crocodile guy who, who was killing people. And I think his name was Vefervoon Lyax. Like, I wrote this down because it was just, it's just such a crazy name. But he looked badass. He's like ash gray, and he had, he had skulls lined up like he was the Predator, and who doesn't like the Predator? I mean, come on, Predator, Predator 2, this is real shit, y'all. So, I mean, I really appreciate that he had a Predator lair, and Sludge saves her and asks her for 35 cents so you can pay back the blind guy that he took paper from, because Sludge is trying hard, man, even though he's losing his mental faculties. Can't remember the word, like, truck from trick. By God, gonna stay up to date on current events. All of a sudden, I'm turning into Sludge. Can't say current. Current events. But, you know, he's going to stay up to date on it. What's the haps? Sit down, read a paper.
She's also not necessarily good at being an investigative reporter, because she's down in the sewer with a camera. looking into things, and then is amazed when he realizes that she is a reporter.
Right.
Like, how did you know I was a reporter? How did you know? Like, because you're down here investigating something with the camera?
Also, was it just me, and this is, I'm not trying to knock anybody or anything, but later on, when, I can't remember who was doing the drawing later, what's his name? I have it written down, folks, so you'll just have to bear with me, but later on, you know, she's drawn, like, completely differently. It seems like they had no idea. I mean, like, there was, like, a different editorial decree about how she would look from moment to moment. Phipps. Phipps was on pencils. I think it's Ken Phipps, but don't quote me. I only wrote your last name, sir. And it's not even that anybody did a bad job. It just seems that from, like, issue to issue, even when Lopresti was doing it, which again, I love his work, and I even love how he drew her, it just seemed like they, you know, that like she would change kind of how she looked and what she wore. Was that just me? I mean, maybe I was reading into it too much. It's entirely possible.
That's not really something I took too much notice of, to be honest.
Well, it's probably just me. Carry on, gentlemen. Carry on. I was wrong. But I think she's a pretty terrific character. They do a pretty good job with her. And, you know, when we get a little farther into the story, we'll talk about a couple continuity things that I'm like, hey, wait, what's going on here? But for the most part, she made things happen. She's like, she was like, you have to compare every reporter and especially every female reporter to Lois Lane, right? Like, that's the law. But she was a lot like the Lois Lane of the 90s, who was not scared, went out and did stuff, which was a nice change of pace for that type of character, particularly female character within superhero or superpowered suspense comic books.
She definitely is not afraid to go out and get the scoop, including crawling down into a sewer where she's pretty sure a giant alligator monster, which, poor kids who encounter this thing.
Oh, right.
You know, like, how many kids tell each other, oh, alligators live in the sewer, yeah, to scare other children? Poor kid who actually has to get eaten by it, you know. It's, what are the odds? But I think that with a character like that, you have to walk a very fine line. Because a lot of times that lady reporter will do anything to get the scoop character can become a little overbearing. But I think, well, first of all, Sludge gets sort of funny around this issue. Like, a little bit of humor starts to get injected into it that I think is beneficial. Like him bumming 35 cents off of her and keeps it sort of just oddly.
I don't remember the blind guy's name, but in my mind he's Blind Louie. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, he's got to get the money for Blind Louie. I don't remember his name. It's probably not really his name. Oh, yeah, Blind Louie, selling the papers.
I have no idea if it is or not, but it's going to be now.
Good old Blind Louie. But, yeah, it does start to get a little funny around this issue, especially after we were introduced a couple issues prior to Bloodstorm. And Bloodstorm is this, like, He's incredibly, I don't know, he's incredibly emblematic of every negative 90s trope that I hear about here at the Unspoken Decade when somebody comes over to tell us, especially on the Facebook page, about everything in the 90s sucked. I don't know why they're wasting their damn time on something that sucks, but, you know, whatevs. Going out of their way to go to a place they know talks about something they don't like, to tell me that they don't like it. I don't have the kind of time of the day. I'm a busy guy. But Bloodstorm is like a bloodthirsty. Imagine that. Bloodstorm's bloodthirsty. Bloodthirsty assassin with all kinds of angst because he was a fat kid who dressed as Jetman, and he doesn't like his mom, and he has a bunch of nice learn to deal with the pain and love the sound of bones being broken and in the blood, he loves the sound of blood, and he beats up some prostitute that he hires. And, like, here's the thing, and I said this to Emily earlier, and then, you know, expand on it, but there's supposed to be some lesson that I'm getting out of this. I feel like there's some higher point that Steve Gerber was trying to convey to me. But I'll be goddamned if I get it. And maybe it's because I'm too close to it, because I was a young man during this time. But honestly, there's something that I'm missing here. And I know he's trying to tell me something. But if it's just satire of all the tropes that I was talking about, the big guns, big blades, you know, et cetera, stuff from the 90s. Okay, but I already knew all that, so it's lost on me.
When he's first introduced in the second issue, and the first issue starts out with a radio guy going on about how, you know, Hoag, the guy who Sludge was before he became Sludge, has disappeared, and how nobody cares, and he can't get any information out of anybody, or they won't give out any information, and it's just because it was a white guy who died, and no one cares about the white man. And it seems very contemporary in a way, like somebody could be on the radio saying these things today, and it would not seem at all out of place. And then when, you know, the second issue starts with this assassin guy, this, you know, former fat kid, who's, I kept waiting for it to be satire as well. I just assumed that that was what was going on, that this was going to be a satirical thing, and that the writers of this comic had very little use for, like, neckbeards.
Right. Right.
And as the comics went on, as I read more and more issues, I didn't really see that happening. I didn't... Like you, I'm just sort of confused now, as if there was something I was missing, or if it was just intended as satire, or maybe it just was not 100% successful. I honestly can't say.
I think the thing is like, if it's supposed to be satirical of, like I said, the 90s, big muscles, big boob, all that kind of, the big guns, that kind of just over-the-top blood action, Rob Liefeld type thing. He can't be played straight. They play him straight the whole time.
It's like completely straight. Completely also, straight. Too, is it not contemporary with a lot of these things?
Yeah, it is. It is.
So is it not
too... But it reads too over the top for me to be like, oh, you know, Steve Gerber's a great writer, okay? And I can't believe that you read the rest of this, you read his other works, I can't believe that he was utilizing that kind of language in a straightforward manner. Although it might be important to point out that, as Tom Mason said, and you can read on the Exiles articles here on the Unspoken Decade, as well as the interview I did with Tom Mason, who was one of the founding people of the Ultraverse in Malibu Comics. He said that Steve Gerber was a really great writer, but that he was late, and he was notoriously late, and to the point where they would have him come in during the day and just pay him per day. Whatever he would write that day, they would pay him for that day, because he needed the money, but if they paid him ahead of time, they'd never get the stuff. So it's possible that maybe I'm overlooking that element of the production of Steve Gerber's Ultraverse work in regards to how over the top this dialogue sounds. Like, he's had to write something down, because otherwise he wasn't going to get any money. And I'm not knocking him for that if that is the case. I love Steve Gerber. May his soul rest in peace. But, you know, I mean, that could be an issue here where there was something greater he was going for, but due to the constraints on his time, in order to make money, he couldn't get there. Or he was trying to do something different and just... Or he was just like, well, I gotta get something down. Bloodstorm.
That's the rest of the writing is so good that, like I said, I kept giving it the benefit of the doubt. I was like, this must be intended as satirical, because if you just read it straight as it is on the page, I'm like, this is so tired. This is something that you've seen so many times before in so many different iterations, that it must be satire that just missed the mark.
And that would not surprise me. Steve Gerber's a guy who definitely goes for satire, and definitely goes for, what's the word I'm looking for? Relevance, that kind of thing in regards to his work. If you look at his Howard the Duck work, it's like scathing social satire. And you look at a lot of his work in Defenders is the same.
But it's one of the few elements of this that does not particularly work very well for me. For the most part, just about everything else is either entertaining or really emotionally affecting or something else that definitely hits its mark.
Now, we talked about the Steve Gerber a lot, but I think it's important to note that Aaron Lopresti, he wrote several of these issues. He plotted issue 4 with the Crocodile God. I believe he wrote issue 5. I'll double check that, but I think he wrote issue 5, and he wrote the last issue, Prime, with Prime. He wrote Andrew it. And I think he wrote 10 and 11 as well. You should Google it. You got your computer over there being the Googles. But I thought it was interesting that he had two writers on this, two primary writers, and the vision stayed fairly consistent. And you actually said that you started to get it on a couple of Lopresti's issues more than Gerber's.
Yes, but then that getting it carried on back through when Steve Gerber wrote the following issues.
Right.
I think it was issue 5 where, and it was not written by Steve Gerber, because I said that that specific one was where I started getting it. Like, oh, well, he actually didn't write that. And I honestly couldn't tell. It felt consistent with the others, but that is, it wasn't even so much the writing got better as I started to emotionally resonate with it a little more. Because up until that point, I didn't really like anybody.
Right.
Because there's not, you know, Sludge as a character doesn't really seem to aspire to anything. He doesn't necessarily have an agenda or a mission beyond he wants to end his suffering. That really seems to be his only real driving factor as a character. And so that's not necessarily much to latch onto as a reader, but it's around that point where you start getting real pathos, like real genuine pathos with this character, because you see him contrasted with with a different creature who really seems to exist only to suffer.
Yeah, and that creature was actually created, you know, by the Caldwell Labs, which created, you know, the stuff. Apparently what it seems to be is that creature was created by is one of the guys who created the stuff that made Sludge. And this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about too. It's very much a part of the Ultraverse, but other than Prime showing up, it's more little tidbits that if you were reading the rest of the Ultraverse, you'd know. For instance, this guy who was working on the bio-restorative formula in order to cure his own lung cancer was working for Aladdin, and Aladdin didn't believe in it. And Aladdin is the secret police organization, not unlike the CIA, in the Ultraverse. And also, we see a group of former Ultratech scientists, which Ultratech is the company that employs Prototype, another Ultraverse comic book. But it was neat to see those little things slipped in. Also, later on, they mention when they go to see Dr. LaLama in upstate New York, which is a crazy name. But he mentions that...
It made me chuckle.
He mentions that the Bash Brothers and Vinaigrette are I see the look
on your face.
I can't
even talk about Vinaigrette. Yeah, we have to build up to Vinaigrette. I just can't even yet.
But they are they're victims of Doc Gross's.
That also made me laugh because I kept saying gross to myself, and then one of the characters in the comic just goes gross, and then getting to that issue and realizing that all of this started based on the research of somebody named Dr. Gross.
Doc Gross, yeah.
Was the funniest thing ever to me.
Well, he's one of the guys who also helped create Prime.
Oh.
So that's the thing. I think that...
Prime, not gross.
Prime, well, a little gross, but like he busts out of that whole XO show. When you read Prime, there will be gross things that happen.
That's fair, but you read 12 issues of a comic where a guy literally is sewage that walks around. Your scale for gross shifts a little bit.
But. Right, but what I was saying with Doc Gross and Aladdin and Ultratech, nice Easter eggs to put in here without pushing and harping on the fact that this is part of a greater shared universe. Probably was easier to do that because it takes place in New York City. Most Ultraverse stuff took place on the West Coast. Imagine that. Malibu Comics decided to place most of their stuff on the West Coast. I mean, I'm laughing, but I don't blame them. It makes sense. But this comic would have found it to be very deleterious had there been a lot of superhero cameos or a lot of ultras, as they're called in the Ultraverse. If a lot more ultras had shown up, it would have affected the vibe in an incredibly negative way.
Yeah, the one issue with Prime,
it works.
It works, but it works because it's probably the only one. This is not something that would benefit. I think
there are a couple other.
I feel like Sludge would be a character that might work in someone else's comic.
Sure, sure.
But I don't see how it would benefit necessarily the other way around.
Yeah, I think this is something where you could get a couple of other ultras in here, a little more like Mantra, since her thing is basically magic, which, you know, Sludge, while not being magic, is certainly within that realm, and we're about to talk about a very magic character. In regards to Sludge, I also think, as weird as this sounds, like a Prototype would probably work, because also he's very connected to science, and it certainly wouldn't be beyond Ultra Tech to try and find this kind of thing out. You might see these guys and it might not ruin the whole thing, because, you know, say, you know, with Prototype, you could just be like, oh, it would be like he's there to protect the scientists. Right. Or what have you. Like, but less is always going to be more in this case. This comic went 12 issues. If it had gone another 12, I would have only wanted to see at the most two more cameos. Even the crossover breakthrough, very, you know, when the Ultraverse line-wide crossover breakthrough comes in, it doesn't really disrupt the flow of what's going on here.
No, certainly not significantly, but it does seem like... It comes at a weird spot because it's the last issue you get, but it's also one where there's been a lot of momentum building plot-wise for Sludge, and so it seems just so abrupt in that sense. I feel like if the story had not seemed like it was abandoning what had just happened before it, it has a greater significance than it would have otherwise, because then there's no more.
Yeah, I don't think it was...
It's hard for me to read out of that context, or knowing this is all I'm ever going to get.
Well, I don't think... Well, first off, Breakthrough happens in issue 4.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Yeah. Breakthrough is the one where... Remember, the Moonie... The people are all nuts because of the moon, and they talk about the focus.
Yeah.
That was a line-wide crossover.
Gotcha,
the Prime show at the end was... You know, at the end was just Prime guest starring in Ultraverse. And of course, it bleeds over into Ultraverse premiere. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Ultraverse number 12 is also Ultraverse... was Ultraverse premiere, I want to say, number 3. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's a
something
flip book.
Like that. Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was a book that floated around the, you know, the Ultraverse. There would be various books. Sometimes that month you would flip it and you'd get the rest of them. But Breakthrough is issue number 4 with that. To address your point, though, I don't think they were getting away from what had happened, because in issues 10 and 11, everybody, Prime goes to see this Dr. LaLama. Because he's ingested a bunch of a drug called Zook that we'll talk about a little more in just a second, he's become more human-esque. But he starts to revert at the end, and at the very end of issue 11, he's reverted back, and he says, just call me Sludge. So I think what would have happened is issue 12 with Prime was kind of a standalone, and then if it had gone on, 13 would have had that crew. We had a good supporting cast now.
Yeah.
With Shelley Rogers and Vinaigrette and the Bash Brothers and Dr. Llama and the ostrich thing, whose name I can't remember.
He's like... Specimen 9.9
beta
or something
beta.
Weird. I don't know. I still can't talk about that yet.
I wrote it down. I wrote it down, but I don't see it here, which is it's very sad. 0.9 beta. That's it.
Yeah.
0.9 beta.
Yeah.
So I think it would have gone on. I don't think it, but because it doesn't, I understand. We do have a little more Sludge to read. We'll do Sludge Red Xmas at Christmas time. Just to close this one off, because Sludge deserves it. And that's the. I'm sure Sludge appeared in a few other Ultraverse titles that we may look at from time to time. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, it is kind of unsettling that, you know, a lot of the questions that were raised in issue 10 and 11 aren't addressed in issue 12, which it seems to me that issue 12 was designed to be a fill-in of sorts. They knew the flip book was coming. Ultraverse premiere flip book. I do have it written down. That is correct.
Yeah.
So 13 was where they're going to pick it back up. That's what I think.
And I certainly agree with you that the times when they do integrate greater Ultraverse storylines in, it's fairly seamless, as you mentioned, in Breakthrough, where there's just a bunch of crazy people around as part of a greater storyline. It blends into the background of just what's going on with Sludge. And, you know, I didn't necessarily have any idea what was going on because I have not read these other titles. But,
right, you didn't have to.
You don't have to. No.
You know.
No. You just understand there's a citywide event going on and it's causing people to act outlandishly.
Right, unless they have focus.
Yeah. But as far as, you know, we were talking about this the scientist who has created another creature in an attempt to cure his own cancer. What struck me as really funny about that...
Garrett Whale is his name.
He was working with, I forget the name of the scientist who ends up dying.
Yeah.
But he's...
Don Johansson.
He is working with Don Johansson, who has had a breakthrough and has called him to tell him about it. But before he can relay this very crucial information to him, he ends up dying. He ends up dying in an explosion lab.
That causes sludge.
The same explosion, yes, that causes sludge. And to find out this crucial information, he has to bring this guy back to life. So I find it very funny that this guy has the ability to bring people back from the dead, but has to do so to get what seems to me to be lesser scientific knowledge.
Right, I see what you're saying. It's like there's a commercial that's on now where this guy's like going out of his way to build a time machine so that he can get a better smartphone.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I'm like,
just build a
smartphone, champ. Yeah. Obviously, you got some brains.
Right.
Hook yourself up. Christ on a pony. Just stepping over dollars to pick up pennies.
Just wait till your cancer kills you, and then have someone bring you back to life using the methods you apparently have to bring people back to life.
Well, of course, that method doesn't work very well. It turns him into a cannibal killer.
Well,
so,
details.
Right. Can't make an omelet. Without breaking a few eggs.
But as I said, this is the first spot where I really started to feel genuine pathos for Sludge, because he, you know, he and this creature fight, as is inevitable, and he sees that they are basically one and the same, and he ends up putting him out of his misery by doing the funny face melty suffocate-y thing.
Now it's funny. It was gross, but now it's funny.
It's, you know, you gotta smile through the tears here. I'm making jokes, so I don't, I'm gonna have, like, a nightmare about this someday, so I gotta make the jokes while I can, but, and, you know, and he thinks about, you know, how, you know, someday he'll join him, and he says, save a spot for me, and that's how, and at that moment, I was just like, oh, God, you know, this was some comp who wasn't even particularly good at being corrupt. Like, he actually thinks that he can just be like, no, thank you.
No, thanks, I'm out.
No, thanks, not going to kill this other cop, but I'm also not going to, like, not tell anyone, but I'm totally just... And he actually asked him, like, how it's going to work. Like, so I just go back to doing my regular thing?
He's like, can I have my gun back?
Yeah.
Can I have my gun back, too?
Like, sure, pal, things are just going to go back to normal. Wink, wink. Like, you know, so... that at that moment, that's when I really felt something... significant for this character.
Well, I felt it prior, but you know, I do understand that is certainly an apex moment in regards to Sludge. And I think one of the last things we have to talk about, maybe two more things, you know, here, but I think when it comes to Sludge, you know, it's a lot like my beloved Kansas City Royals. And we could say a lot about the Kansas City Royals, including, you know, 2015 World Champions. But any conversation we have about the Kansas City Royals will start and end with George Brett, Hall of Famer, greatest third baseman of all time. If we talk about Sludge, and there's a lot to talk about, this conversation will probably, more than likely, start and end with Lord Pumpkin. Lord Pumpkin is almost undeniably the villain of the Ultraverse. It is almost undeniably one of, I think it's one of like the top five or top 10 just images of the 90s. It's probably, as far as indie comics, in particular indie superhero suspense comics, it's got to be, you know, one of the top five, you know, villains maybe ever, top 10 villains ever. Lord Pumpkin is one of the coolest guys you'll ever see or be around, or, well, not literally be around, but, you know, have around in your comic books. I mean, he's a fantastic character, great speech pattern, cool powers, a surprisingly complex, incredible jerk, but very nice to his young assassin guy.
That's what I was gonna say, he actually would be nice to have around. I actually made a note to myself about, wow, he sure is nice to his pals.
He is nice to his friends.
He's really nice to his friends. If you're on his good side, he's a good guy to have in your corner.
When that high-dollar call girl-looking courier who carries his drug, Zook, around, when she gets aced, he takes it personally. And part of it is apparently because he wanted to have sex with her, he says. But I think also he was like, these people are working for me. Which leads me to the question, and I'm not trying to be that guy, but I don't. One of the only things that's not addressed to me is like, why does he want to be a crime lord anyway? It seems like he can do much more. It seems like he should have much higher aspirations. And maybe this would have been something that, you know, he did have larger aspirations, and we would have seen them come to fruition, or almost come to fruition, as I'm sure Sludge and Powell's would have somehow stopped him, you know, in later issues. But it's just odd how he's in this three-way crime war. Like, what do you care? Like, I mean, you're a living pumpkin, champ. I don't, I mean.
There are so many things I want to say about this character. One of the first is, I was so amused by the fact that there's this very serious crime war going on. And there's, like, three different factions. There are the people that turn Sludge into Sludge.
The Marcello, that's Marcello's mom.
Is it the Dragon Fang, the Wongs?
Yeah, the Wongs.
And then there's Pump, Lord Pumpkins. The Lord Pumpkins crew.
And he runs the zoo.
And they don't know he's a pumpkin. They don't know for a while at first that this guy is a pumpkin. So they're talking about him, and they're making these plans. They're going to maybe ally with each other against him, and they're going to, you know, arranging meetings and things, and they keep talking about him. And the whole time, this guy's a pumpkin, and they don't know. And they just amuse me to no end. It's all very serious and very straightforward and very straight, like, mobster organized crime stuff. Like, yeah, we're going to meet here, and I'll have my bodyguards, and he'll have his, and yada, yada, yada. And the whole time, dude is a pumpkin. And I like, at first it bothered me, but the more I read, the more I actually enjoyed. You don't really know what his motives are at that point. Sure, who he is, you don't. Why is there a pumpkin?
Well, I think this is explained in Lord Pumpkin number 0, which we should take a look at sometime, which I think has its origin.
I would love to. I would love more of the guy who is a pumpkin. and, you know, as you very rightly pointed out, there's really no reason given for why this guy who is a pumpkin.
But I will say, I love that trope. Like, I love the vampire criminals and the werewolf criminals. Yeah. I do enjoy it, but I always want to know a little about more than I got here with Lord Pumpkin. Although, I would have
wanted more eventually. You know, and as you said, there's issue 0 where you actually get this. And had Sludge gone on and had he continued to be, you know, an antagonist in this or a prominent character in this, I would have wanted a lot more information. But as it stood, it was just fun. It was just fun to have that mystery. And at one point, you know, he's selling this drug, Zook, that is, at first seems to be for very high-end clientele. And it's driven around by these very, you know, and I also felt very bad. He had to feed this lady to this plant that
makes
this drug.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Zooks are made out of people. It's like Soylent Green. They use a Zook, Zook, comes in like green gel
big capsules,
and there's one page, I forget where it is, but it's like the guy, and it's like it's just talking about him doing the drug, and like, again, I felt a lot like if it was Bloodstone, like I was supposed to get something out of this,
right? You see, but like, I was his like, face, and it's like his face is like a skeleton, and then there's like an in-between face,
and then he's like got a happy face, like,
yeah
and I'm just like, am I supposed to get something?
Well,
just like,
fictional drugs are always really amusing, and with this one, I
Nuke from RoboCop 2 is a favorite. Not to be confused with Zook, what we're talking about now. Not an N, but a Z. Put it on its side.
And at one point, a lady who's being sold Zook makes a very funny joke when she gets, like, the street version. And
Baby
she makes
Zook.
A joke about, yeah, it being cubic zooconia, which I thought was quite clever.
Good job,
lady who later ends up, you know, going into, like, an angel dust fake crazy face.
Oh, yeah. Because the baby Zook has terrible side effects for people.
Beyond being, like, speed, they describe it as being very speedy.
Yeah, they did.
And how it can help you, like, do things for hours. But it's also, since it's part organic and it's part, you know, crystal, and they don't really... I don't really quite get... Yeah, I feel like there's something I'm missing there, too.
And also, the plants are apparently from another dimension, because remember, Dr. LaLama is in that other dimension, and those things come to eat him, and Sludge has to go rescue him.
There's a
lot of stuff that goes on. And again, I assume this all would have been connected a lot more had they gotten more issues.
As it stands right now, some of it, I'm like, it just seems like it's weird for weirdness' sake, because you don't ever get, you know...
Nothing wrong with that now, Emily.
My favorite part of this is a guy who's a pumpkin for no reason.
Lord Pumpkin rules.
But yeah, you never really quite get a sense of what this drug does, but or what his motive is in selling it, because at first, you know, he said he's just selling it to these high-end clientele, and then later on, Baby Zoot comes out. But it causes these people to go crazy, and they start burning things down and, you know, going off and killing lots of people and acting, you know, like in, like how Angel Dust and PCP made Jack an after-school special.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
But you don't really, is he just trying to cause chaos? Is he just trying to bring about the city's downfall? Is he trying, you never really get...
Well, it seemed like he created that so that his protege, who he called Young Pistol, would have his own business.
Who he's so nice to.
Super nice. Despite the fact that that is the creepiest kid that wasn't in The Omen.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And he's always wearing, like, a suit and a hat. And kids are creepy under the best of circumstances, but this one's...
Lord Pumpkin winds up meeting his demise at the hands of a super cyborg that the Dragon Fang family brings into play.
Who is the lady who, Sludge rescues and fucks up her arm by touching her.
Yeah, the illegal immigrant that I mentioned earlier. And she actually also kills Quinn, the cop who's working every angle. He's working for the Marcellos. He's working for the Dragon Fang. And he's working for the cops. So she, like, goes predator on him and rips out his spine, which I'm, you know, if you're listening to this, look on the page, because I took a capture. I ain't gonna let you down, folks.
That's when you need to see. And it's like the first thing she does, like the first order she gets is like, kill this guy. And she doesn't even just like beat him to death. She just goes straight for ripping out the spine.
But she takes out Lord Pumpkin by, and you said, oh, it's just easy. She just shoots him a bunch. Actually, his weakness is the candle. You'll notice if you go back and look, like she aims at the candle and knocks it out. If you knock the flame off the candle in his mouth, he becomes inert. So I think that's the thing, because...
I thought she cut him in half with a laser.
She did that first.
Oh, and then she knocks him. Yeah, it all makes sense, though, because he's a jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Everything's coming together because this is the unspoken decade, baby. You know it's Dean Compton. You know I'm the 90s guy. Everybody knows it. It ain't no secret out there on the interwebs. But that's the end of Lord Pumpkin for now. And like, and we'll look at Lord Pumpkin number zero. I believe Lord Pumpkin was created by a wizard to be a plaything for a prince, and this prince was very evil. Somehow Lord Pumpkin got magical powers and did evil things to the prince instead and, you know, came to our dimension. But don't quote me on that, folks. I haven't read it in a super long time. But we'll look at it again real soon. The only other thing to really talk about is the Aaron Lopresti finish. He did the art and the... he did the pencils and the writing for Prime, for when Prime guest starred in issue number 12 in the Ultra Premiere flip book. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, really, really fun. And we learned that perhaps Prime and Sludge are very connected.
Well, Prime hates being sticky.
Prime does hate being sticky, something that I agree with him about. I don't like being sticky either.
Which also, too, this goes back to Sludge being very sort of casual about his violence. He knows who Prime is, recognizes him as an Ultra.
Yeah, everybody does. He is the Ultra.
Still tries to melt his face.
Well, but he's under control of the lady then, right?
But even later on, he still just, he marshaled that very casual, like, oh, I couldn't melt that guy's face. Like, doesn't think anything of it, but he's not, like, remorseful about it, or not like, oh, I could have really hurt, like, he's just like, oh,
well,
my face, I couldn't melt, yeah, like.
I like where Sludge is encountering Prime for the first time. He's like, I know him, this guy, who is he? And then the Prime logo comes up, and it says prune. I think it's prune. It wasn't, but this was a fantastic one shot that would really harken back to like when Superman went to the House of Mystery in DC Comics Presents, or when Batman and the Demon would team up, and you know, here was a superhero getting involved in a magical tale, because this is a tale of magic. A witch compels Sludge to do her bidding to unite the Wortham Stone, which I assume is an Easter egg about Frederick Wortham, who wrote the book Seduction of the Innocent in the 50s, which was a book that really lambasted comic books and, you know, created witch hunts for them. You know, literally people burn comics and the like. You know, put it together, bring her son and his minions back, which she manages to do. Her son accidentally steps on her because now he's like a super giant ogre demon. And the Prime and Sludge get it on. They fight, and then they fight against other these demons that are coming out. You get to see everything that you would want from an over-the-top Captain Marvel slash Superman type guy like Prime is meeting the ugly heap monster like Sludge.
It's certainly a odd couple that packs a punch.
Bah, 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 bah,
they're both very funny. That's one thing. Prime made me laugh just being like, ah, I hate being sticky. Sludge also, that was one of the other things that really endeared me to him as I was reading it, is he's actually quite amusing.
Right.
In situations where, like, you know, when he finally, he cancerifies the guy who ordered him to be killed in the first place, and he basically throws him off a building, and then he thinks about how he could follow him down, and then he's like, oh, I probably just paralyzed myself, but then I still wouldn't die. 100 years of wheelchair basketball for me.
right.
Want anything to do with that. So that's one thing that I appreciated both of their...
Yes, and I think that's an element of horror that, you know, can sometimes be overdone. That's not done here, though, is it is funny in all the right places and really good. Really good about tempering the humor with creepiness and vice versa. But all in all, you'll be able to find Sludge in a lot of bargain bins. It's not a comic book that goes for a lot. There's only 12 issues in the Red Xmas special. And for, you know, $12, $13, I couldn't recommend it much more.
Yeah, and we didn't even have to talk about Vinaigrette or that weird.
Well, we'll leave some stuff for people who listen to this and want to read it to find out. But you'll find out all about Vinaigrette and her giant bird at 0.9 beta.
Basically, she's a salad dressing lady. Okay, that's
more or less. Salad it does,
dressing lady.
It seems that way. Yeah.
That was around the time I wrote to myself. Sometimes this just seems weird for weirdness sake.
It didn't seem a little weird for weirdness sake, but. All in all, it would have been interesting to see what Vinaigrette and the Bash Brothers and Dr. LaLama and that whole crew teamed up with Shelley Rogers, what would have been in store for Frank Hoag the rest of the way. It's a shame that the Ultraverse shut down when it did. You know, I think it went on a little bit, but, you know, it went on a little longer just without Sludge. And that's a shame. I wish we would have gotten to see more. It would have been... I don't know that it could have gone on for a super, super long time, but it certainly had another 12 to 24 issues.
It was hitting
in
it. A really, really good stride.
Yeah.
By the time it ended. It was really... It felt like it was, like I said, like that was part of what was... Not disappointing because the Prime issue was good, but it was disappointing that that's the last you get because it had really just found its momentum. As you said, it had just found a great supporting cast. We didn't even really talk about the Bash Brothers, who kind of look like comic book versions of the Road Warriors, except far more gracious.
Right. You
more,
tell them, Hog!
A little more eloquent. And, you know, seems like it would have been a lot of fun, caveat. had it gone on.
Would have been creepy, but it also would have been a lot of fun. Well, all I know for sure about Sludge is one thing, and that is from now on, I will no longer remain unspoken. So I'm Dean Compton, and for Emily Scott, we appreciate you listening. And until next time here at the Unspoken Decade, hey, keep it extreme. Keep it 90s. That's what we're doing around here, folks.